If you have the ability to be a leader, then you have to invest in that person for them to be an actual leader.
Welcome to Evolving Your Workplace After Hours, where my co-host, Rob Swimer, and I share our two cents on hot topics in the business world. Rob is a veteran sales leader in high tech, best-selling author, resilience coach, and speaker. And I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime professional recruiter and executive coach, the creator of talent-centric organizations, and also a best-selling author. Combined, we have 70 years of experience in this world. Let's get into it.
Hey, Carol, what's going on?
Rob, I do want to point out things are great, but I do want to point out that this is our last episode together, and I don't want to get weepy over it.
I am. I'm getting weepy.
You are committing your time full time between, you know, your part time golf career and your new full time career as a public speaker.
Yeah.
And you got to put 150% into that. So for anybody listening, we've put it out there. I've got people looking. I'm looking for a co-host. So we may be off for a month or so for after hours. We'll see. But I did want to mention that so that people don't think you just vanished.
I appreciate that. And it's been a great ride. And you know, we go back so long and we have so much love for each other. And I hope it shows. Yeah. I hope it shows as we did this and had a blast with all these different subjects and a little bit provocative sometimes. But I want to focus on, you know, my mission and you know, and my purpose here is very resolute. So, but I appreciate and so grateful for the time we had together. So thank you for that.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. How to wrap it up from my perspective, what a great topic we have. And this is, I'm just going to like wind you up and let you go for this. This is a good one. I just love this. So here's the topic. You ready, everybody? Here it is. Why top performers quit and what they won't tell you. This is just, this is really.
What they won't tell you, right.
What they won't tell you, right. What they won't tell you.
Yeah.
And you know, what is it? The ultimate exit interview that never really happens or the exit, right? I always say, did you have your exit interview? I'm like, really, does that even matter? We always say the same thing. It was a real pleasure working for the company and it was the best experience of my life. And I really appreciate all that you did for me. And I'm grateful for the experience. And, you know, and that made
me, you know, I have a lot of sunshine to blow up your skirt.
But, I had a lot of those in my career. Yeah, I did. But it would be nice if somebody sat down and said, here's why I quit. And especially a top performer is a person that's made the number 7, 8 years in a row. They go through a transformation, culture changes, whatever the case may be, and they leave. And you never really know why they left. So, Carol, I'm just winding you up. Let's see. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll try not to barf out too much without letting you get a few words in edgewise. So there are several reasons that high performers quit. And there may even be more than the, you know, 5 or 6 I want to talk about that I think are really the most important. And to your point, they won't necessarily even tell you when they quit, right?
Oh,
sometimes they
will.
So here's what I would say is I think the only way they're going to tell you what is eating them after they quit is if you have a culture of feedback. We've talked about that a lot. What is a culture of feedback? It is being able to speak to anybody, you know, to the side, above or below you without getting, you know, any fear of getting thrown under the bus.
Yeah.
But there's caveats, right? And having to knowing how to communicate that, right?
Sure.
And then here's the other thing. If you have a culture of feedback in the first place, your high performers aren't going to quit for the reasons that they might then tell you.
That's right.
So it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you've got, or is it a catch 22? Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. It's a catch 22, right? So if you have a culture of feedback, they're probably not going to quit. They're going to talk to you about it before they quit.
Yeah. They might even actually come to you before they've made the decision to quit.
Well, exactly. The decision to start looking for a new job.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Hey, look, you know, we got to change some things here. This is a little uncomfortable. Yeah. And I, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. That's even better, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there's several things. One are, and I always say, people don't leave companies, they leave managers, they leave their bosses.
Yeah, they do.
So, and by the way, that's not just the high performers, all right? But the high performers often tend to be the most painful to you. because they cost you the most money when they quit.
Yeah, they do. That's a big zero.
Second, and this mostly works around anybody who has an MBO, management by, what do they call that?
Management by objectives.
Management by objective. Yeah, I don't know why I was.
Objectives, yeah.
I know what that is. And all of a sudden, so either an MBO or you have a quota, right? Or you have a bonus. So people that have those extra incomes coming in, and you as a quota carrying salesman, I'm sure you can provide a little color on this. So I'll stop here before I go on. When companies change your quota and your comp plan, too much.
Yeah, that's the big one, right? The big one. Mm-hmm. If you're a go-to-market executive, that's the big, you know, shot in the arm where they change the quota period. They change the plan. They move the needle. They move the goalpost. I mean, anybody listening is smiling now because it's happened to them.
Yeah, of course,
it happens everywhere. And I've been on the other side too, where sometimes it's not because it's something they couldn't help, or it's something they had to do, or it's, you know, it's not for being mean sometimes, you know, it's like, we always think, oh, you know, they're changing, what assholes they are, you know, it's like, but you know, the reality is they may not be, you know, and I've been on the other side where it's like, oh crap, you know, we just did this or that. We got to move the needle and we feel horrible about it, but it's a culture of feedback that makes it worth it. You just said that. So all these things, all these issues go away. All this bullshit leaves because now you've got a culture of feedback. You're saying, hey, why are we doing this? Oh, here's the reason why we're doing this. Oh, okay. I get that. Okay. I'm going to have to live with that. Okay. I see.
This out of left field.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't just get up one day and say, hey, you know what? I think Mark can sell more. I'm going to give him more quota for the next 3 months. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen like that.
Well, I feel like I've probably told this story on one of our earlier episodes, but in case somebody missed it or I didn't do that, I'll say it here. I'll never forget when a buddy of mine, he was the first line sales manager. He worked for Informix. For those of you listening who aren't old enough.
No, I got that. Yeah.
Three main database companies, Oracle, Informix, and Sybase.
Sybase.
And Informix got acquired by IBM.
Yep.
He was at 100, and I'll never forget this. It's one of those things that even 25 years later, you remember, right? He was at 130% of his annual number. Sales manager, annual number. It was 30% over his annual quota. And IBM bought them, readjusted quotas, and now he was at 80% of his annual quota.
Yep. Happens
and
every day.
I just shake my head when I hear stuff like this. But IBM is famous, notorious for managing your income. And this is how they do it, right? Hmm. So why do high performers stay around? That's a great example of why a high performer says, F you, I'm gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is, I mean, wrong. How do you change my annual number? I mean, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
I never use that word lightly, by the way.
I can never understand that. I've heard stories like that too. I never had that happen to me per se. I can't remember that happening to me. I'm very fortunate, but I've heard a lot of stories about that. And, you know, the other story that hits me is, and this is a true story that happened to me. I had a top performer on my team at one point, and the deal that put him over the edge for President's Club got reviewed and, you know, we got prior consent and everybody agreed it was the right way to structure it. And then comp got a hold of it and said that wasn't the, you know, it was back and forth. And end game was he ended up missing his quota by a few points because of it, not going to President's Club. I felt horrible. And God, what was it? 3 months later, he's gone.
Yeah.
Now I got a zero in the spreadsheet for 6 months until I found somebody. 6 more months to train them.
6 months. So let's just look at that a minute. Let's go into that because this is important for people to learn, right? So 6 months of nobody in that, there's your opportunity cost right there. Do you remember what his quota was?
I don't, but I mean, it was certainly millions, you know?
Right, millions. Okay, so now you've got a guy, let's just say his quota was 3 million.
Yeah.
Now you're already a million and a half in the hole.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Because it took you 6 months to replace him. You know, and that's just one piece of it. Now you've got somebody new. How long is that ramp up going to be?
6 to 9 months.
Right. So now you're over 3 million in the hole.
Right.
And then when you add to that, and that's just your opportunity cost, right? If you add to that the hard cost, what were we paying for salary? What did we pay him in non-recoverable draw, if there was any? What did we pay him in... In insurance, the insurance coverage.
Yep.
Right. And all these things that cost you money, plus the headache for the person who has to now replace them.
I mean, it's common sense, right? Yeah. Common sense. But it happens every day.
Yes, it does happen every day. Number three.
All right, what's number three? I can't wait. What do you got?
Number three is declining product. Right? So maybe your product's not working as expected.
Yeah.
Now, the people that will most directly impact are your salespeople.
Yeah.
Now they're having trouble if they've got any integrity whatsoever of selling something that's not working properly. But it affects the whole company, right?
It does.
I mean, it affects your salespeople from the standpoint, if they can't sell the product, they're not going to make money. If they can't make money, they're not going to stay around. Okay. Yeah. I don't want to focus this on sales because we're not talking just about sales. We're talking about high performers in general, right? So, you know, you've got a software engineer who's a stud, right? And there's somebody on the person's team who just cannot get out of their own way, making mistakes. You know, you've got, you know, in certain countries, you can't just fire people. You can't put them on a PIP, a performance improvement plan.
Yeah, it takes years.
Right. So you may be completely screwed. And there's lots of consequences to a declining product. Or, you know, or you're at a point where they're not adding features. You're at the point where you should be adding features and functions and you're not. Right. So you're not keeping up with the times. Right. Yeah, does that mean everybody should use AI everywhere? No.
No.
We have to be careful with stuff like that. But you are building something and you do need to stay up to date at what your customers are going to want. Well, how do you find out what your customers want? You ask them questions.
Right.
Customer success.
I had
so that
I'll tell
leads
you
me to number four, which is your customers' needs.
Right. Well, I'll tell you a quick story. I'll tell you a quick story. Yeah. I was selling years ago, and the product was I ended up leaving because of that issue. So, but before that, I remember that I sold a company. I had the Rust Belt somewhere in Ohio or whatever. And I came in the office one day and the box was on my desk. You know, the manuals, the software bag, the box was on my desk. They just returned it. That's the only time in my 40 plus year career that I had a box. I mean, I've never had anybody actually ship a box back to me. You know, do you think I stayed long after that? Probably not. So anyways, go ahead. But that's, that's
so
the stuff
so
that
the product leads me into then, you know, being able to ask those questions and fulfill your customer needs. And that, like I said, that happens in many ways. We see it, I think, probably most profoundly when it comes to sales, to your point.
Yeah.
Right? You know, saying you are customer centric is the same as companies saying they are talent centric. It's often complete bullshit. Right. So they're really not paying attention to their customers' needs. Or somebody in customer success has, you know, 1,000 customers. How do you get to those 1,000 customers? Right. To make sure that they're hearing what you want. I had a client years ago when I was still doing search work, startup. They were amazing. I did this for them. It's the only company I've ever done this for. They had many, they hired me to do many projects for them. But the co-founder and CTO wanted me to find him software engineers, something I had never done.
Wow.
Something I never did after that.
Right.
And I wanted to basically half the time shoot myself between the, you know, put a bullet between my ears. Because it's different. Reaching out, it's very different how you engage those people. Fortunately, I had many years experience already.
Yeah.
I had already over 20 years experience, so I knew how to engage them. But you know, one of the things that Joe wanted, which I thought was really brilliant, and of course I don't know if other people hiring software engineers ask their software engineers to do this.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, if you don't, you should start. Okay.
Right.
You want to hire software engineers who can communicate with your customers and your prospects.
Yeah.
So often, you know, people put them in a cubicle and, you know, down 10 floors underground, you know, and they have no contact with the outside world of your company.
Right.
And that is a mistake. Okay.
Yeah.
He wanted people who could who could really sit on a pre-sales call with them.
Wow. That's cool.
And find out, because they have a capability of answering the questions technically that the salesperson and even the salesperson the pre-sales person cannot necessarily answer.
Right.
Right. Is this is something we'd like. Is it possible? And it's, again, this is just goes back to communicating.
Always does, right?
I'm going to say you're customer centric, be customer centric.
It always does. How many times did engineering come out with a release and you say, you know, we think the customer needs this? It's like, has anybody asked the customer? You know, and it seems like a simple thing, but yeah. Okay. That's a good one. What else you got?
Okay, that's number four. Number five, career growth. Now, career growth has a different meaning to different people.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as offering bonuses and perks to your employees. I've written about this. You know, we just don't, you know, somebody in HR shouldn't just decide, well, this is what we're going to do. No. Let's ask your people, because a perk for me is not necessarily a perk for you, Rob.
Career growth for me is not necessarily career growth for you.
You know, I know plenty of salespeople. They have no interest in managing.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Some of them may just want to make money, a lot of money.
Yeah. Career salesperson.
Let's ask
them,
what motivates you? What do you need from the standpoint of your career?
I mean, I know a lot of people like that, by the way. And that's when the comp plan comes into play and everything. You know, that's why you don't want to move the needle and all that. So, you know, career salespeople, amazing. I love them. They're happy and they have a purpose and they're fulfilled, and that's all good. Everybody has their own thing, you know?
Right. You know, you're sometimes given more work, not given more opportunity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's assumed, I think often it's assumed that high performers will speak up, right? So this takes us back to a culture of feedback, and they won't. I could give you more, you know, examples of that. You know, typically this is not the case. They don't actually speak up. And it's why, again, this culture of feedback is literally, it's imperative that you have it in place. You know, I had a career client, gosh, this is a long time ago. I bet it's close to 20 years ago. And really lovely guy. And as I was doing his discovery, which is what I, you know, do with any client, whether it's coaching or, you know, the other work that I do is a fractional chief of organizational strategy, I do discovery first. And when I got back, I think it was two jobs prior to the one he was currently in. I can say this because nobody knows who it is. He worked for ADP long ago. And he said to me, he spent 8 years there before he left. He said, it was the best job I ever had. I said, why did you quit? And he said he was having some issue and I don't remember what that one is at this point, because that's not really even that important what the issue was. But he was afraid if he said something to his manager would think he was looking for a job and fire him. So I remember the important points of that. That's an important point.
Yeah.
So instead, he quit.
What a shame.
Right. So that you know, gets to the point, they don't speak up. And this culture feedback is so important. Oh my goodness. I have really so many often clients say, you know, scale of 1 to 10, where do you think you are as far as culture feedback?
Yep.
Right. And I think we're 7. Well, you know, and then I got to start digging into the people, the employees.
Yeah.
Where do you think you are? Let's define what a culture feedback is. So we're all playing, you know, we're all benchmarked against the same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, leaders often think that, so those are the 5 things. And there's probably some more. I just think these are the most, you know, managers and bosses, quotas and bonuses, product going down, customer needs and career growth. And I think, you know, leaders often think that retention is about being engaged. But for high performers, I really believe it's around alignment of all of these things.
Yeah. Alignment.
Okay.
Yep. And a challenge, right? They want to be challenged.
Yeah. Right. And I want to make one distinction between high performer and high potential. That, you know, high performers are those who consistently outperform. Pretty simple.
Yeah.
Here's your benchmark at X.
Yep.
Where are you? Above that, right?
Yep.
And they tend to behave consistently with the organizational values. So those are, then we talk about the 80-20 rule. Those are the top 10 or 20%. Okay. Which doesn't mean you can't bring some other people up to that level. There's always going to be people who are never going to be in that top 10 or 20%, but you still need those people. They're valuable to your organization. High potentials, which is what you and I both were, at least they thought we were. When we got our first management role, they thought, oh, look, they're a high performer. They must have high potential also. Wrong. Okay. That's the person who has the ability to succeed in roles that are larger in scope or challenge. Right. So as we both said, we both got put into other roles and we both sucked in our first leadership role. Because were we really high potential at that point? I would probably say no to myself at that point. I don't think I was high potential.
Well, I think you said it right.
That.
Yeah. But I like what
but
you said
about
it.
I needed to be to be able to, like I said, be able to take on a larger role or a challenge.
Right. But what you said was the ability to do it, right? And that'd be like saying, you know, I have the ability to be a baseball player in the major leagues. And so they just put me in there. They just put me in the show and I go. Now, I think that I would get eaten alive. But if I have the ability, then there is a progression to where I go to the minor leagues, I go to I go to AAA, whatever it is, and I go up the ranks. And if I continue to get that ability and have that ability, then they continue to bring me up. But it's the same thing in business. It's the same thing in leadership. If you have the ability to be a leader, then you have to invest in that person for them to be an actual leader.
Yes.
And going back to what we did in the last episode, that person also has to be involved in their own rescue, as I say. They have to be invested in their leadership track as well. They have to be a student of their leadership game. And that's really important. So that's what I would say about that.
Amen, brother.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
anything else to agree or disagree with?
No, I think it's all good. I think that hopefully people are listening and maybe, you know, give us feedback. And again, it's been an absolute pleasure. Awesome experience being with you, and our paths always cross. So I don't say, you know, we'll we do things like all ways together. Yeah. Yeah. It's all good.
But I think I talk to your wife more than I talk to you, but anymore.
I know. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed it, and I've had a blast, and I wish everybody all the success that the universe gives you and that you're worthy of, and live with purpose and have a great life.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace After Hours. I'm your host, Carol Schultz.
And I'm your co-host, Rob Swimer. Don't forget to click follow to hear more. And please leave us an honest review and rating so we can continue to improve and bring you more great stories.
Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.